Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Cannabis Marketing Podcast. I'm Rob Howard, founder of Daily Story. Today, we're going to talk about dispensary marketing. I'm joined today by Daniel Paul. Daniel is the VP of Marketing at Nobo Incorporated. Nobo is a top-of-the-line medical and adult-use cannabis grower, processor, and retailer dedicated to providing the best patient and customer experience in the cannabis industry. Daniel leads all the marketing activity and strategy, and specifically is focused on opening new Nobo dispensaries. Daniel, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, Daniel, I'm really thrilled to do this podcast with you. I think there's a lot of great insight that you can share with our audience. And, you know, when I was going through the process of stalking you on LinkedIn and reading up all about you, you've got a really great background with a lot of agency experience. And, you know, I guess one of the first questions I have is what made you decide to kind of switch from the agency side to the client side, and why cannabis?
Well, being based in Colorado, obviously cannabis has been around for a long time, and being commercially available, it was hard to get around what was going on. And it really felt to me, because I was at Apple at the early days, of the technology industry all over again. It was a new industry. It was something that had, granted, a little bit different, but had a weird reputation in that it was geeky. It was, you know, for the computer industry. And so for the cannabis industry is, you know, it's evil. It's got a stigma to it. And so the idea of coming over where it's legal and, you know, people can make a choice of what they want really was exciting to me. And then obviously the marketing of it becomes fascinating in getting people to accept a product and understand an industry that they had no, you know, that there are preconceived notions that just don't make sense. And so for me, it's like the ultimate marketing challenge.
Yeah, and it certainly comes with a lot of challenges. I mean, there's all mm-hmm. the various compliance, which I'm sure you're intimately familiar with, and we're going to get to that topic as I do with all my guests on the show. But, you know, maybe you could give me some kind of tactical points on kind of what you did at the agency that helped kind of translate over to now being on the client side. Like, I'm sure there's things that you can immediately transfer over, but there's a lot probably that you couldn't really transfer over.
Well, yeah. So those that couldn't transfer over is using traditional media. You know, so in my agency days, you launch a campaign on Google, with Facebook, with Instagram, Snapchat, you name it, all of them will happily take your money. With cannabis marketing, that's not the case. You can't go to Google and buy it. Yes, there are ways around it. There are agencies that say, oh, we can get you on Google, and that there are ways to get around it. But in reality, that's not, you know, it's not the standard practice. So you have to think differently. You have to look at things differently. There's a lot more rules and regulations in Michigan, for example. You know, you have to make sure that your ad is seen by at least 70% of the audience has to be over 21. So there's just rules and regulations that you have to get over and you have to look at that help to just put up roadblocks. But at the end of the day, you're going to use all media available to you to really get the customer's attention and ultimately drive them to come into your store or order online with you or what have you, but you want them as a customer.
Yeah, I think what I oftentimes see in the conversations that I've had with various marketers is they're very excited to get into the cannabis industry, but they don't realize all kind of the headwinds that exist there from a marketing perspective. And so it's always surprising to me, I guess, that when you have the conversation with an agency, like we can't do Google ads, you know, there's certain restrictions we have around how we use Instagram. And it always seems to be a big surprise for people coming over from the agency world. It sounds like you've navigated that quite well.
Well, and it's interesting, as now in a position that I am using agencies, I have to be very careful and shush them outright, because a lot of agencies are like, oh, I can bring my expertise into the cannabis space, and I know how to manage media and do all of that. And you're exactly right, 100%, that a lot of them either haven't done the due diligence or don't get it yet and are like, oh, wait, we can't run it on Google, or your Facebook page will get shut down because it's overly promotional. It's got pricing information. It's all the things that you would do with traditional marketing that you just can't do in the cannabis space.
Yeah, I want to get into the social media stuff too. And I think before we do that, I think it'd be helpful to kind of set a little bit of kind of groundwork as far as how many dispensaries you have, kind of what your kind of target audience is right now. Some of the kind of basic marketing kind of stuff that any marketer would do when they're starting a retail business.
So we presently have two retail locations in Michigan, one in Edwardsburg and one in Muskegon, so on the western side of Michigan. We do own additional licenses and we'll be opening up additional dispensaries or provisioning centers over the course of the next couple months of 2021. We look at, and I hate to say it because it made me groan when I was at the agency, but really, our customer is everyone. So let me narrow that down a little bit. Obviously, 21 plus, we service both med and rec, but really see the upside in the recreational adult use customer. And within that, it runs the gamut of, that 21-year-old college kid who just turned 21. In the old days, you'd go out and celebrate by having a beer. Well, guess what? Now they can buy cannabis legally. And so that all the way up to somebody in their 60s, 70s who is tired of the pharmaceutical medicines and remembering back to their youth of like, hey, cannabis made me feel better, or it helps to alleviate a pain or something along those lines. We also look at the CEO mom. She comes home, may have a red wine, a glass of red wine. Well, hey, why can't you have a half a gummy with that red wine? Or how about substituting a piece of chocolate for that red wine to give you that feel that doesn't knock you out with your kids, isn't going to give you a hangover the next day. It doesn't have a negative connotation as well. And as well as we go for the high-end consumer who's got a high-end dab rig, who's looking for caviar and shatter and all the various types of really much more sophisticated use. So we try to cater to all of them.
So you just described, I think, the perfect conundrum, which is you've got audiences in a variety of markets that are consuming a variety of different channels and media and maybe I'm jumping ahead, but that may include direct mail. I mean, I know you guys do some email and text marketing. Obviously, the website is an important piece. What's the mix for you guys? Like from print to different media forms, like where do you put your marketing dollars right now?
Yeah, that's a great one. We have not done print yet. Now, we've done a little bit of outdoor, and if you drive through Michigan, you see loads of outdoor. So we're testing the water there for a marketer. I know that billboards work, but it's really hard to track them. But we really focus a lot on email. We are focusing on social media. We're focusing on texting, both SMS and MMS messages, just trying to get that direct connect with the consumer because of the limitations on all of the channels. We've looked into direct mail. I'm a big fan of direct mail. It's really kind of honing in on, how small of a DMA do we want to get to and how do we want to do it. But at this point in our marketing, it's almost try anything. We have some digital media running in Michigan, very much targeted in a conquesting approach. So it really right now is running the gamut to test what's working. We're beginning to explore, podcasts. Can we advertise in podcasts? And again, then you run into the rules of kind of what is acceptable, who's going to take the ads, all of those things. So again, we're putting our finger in the wind, seeing which way it's blown and seeing what's going to work to resonate with our consumers.
Yeah, and I hear the same thing from all of the folks in the cannabis business that I speak with, from growers to dispensaries to manufacturers. The one common thread, well, there's multiple common threads. I can't say there's one common thread, but one of the pieces of commonality is the willingness to explore all the different channels that are available to them. But the other kind of piece that we always come back to is the variability of compliance from state to state. So I don't know if you're planning on doing business outside of Michigan, but that's got to introduce a whole new level of complexity to marketing.
It definitely does. And we have always erred on the side of being more conservative in that we know the enforcement may not be as strong as it could be from various agencies, but we don't want to be the one that blatantly violates a rule or anything along those lines. So we, you know, we don't use a lot of green in any of our advertising. We're not using a cannabis leaf. We're, you know, not expressly making any medical claims or anything that we could get dinged on. And so we try to be as conservative as possible so that whatever we learn can go state by state, because each state has a little bit different rules as to what we can do. And so we're trying to really take that high end approach so that we don't have to change everything for every state when we get to that point. But we do, you know, we spend a good amount of time almost every week just reviewing latest bulletins and so forth from the various cannabis or marijuana regulatory agencies.
Yeah, and that's a good kind of tail into the compliance discussion. I mean, how do you guys manage compliance? Because I was talking with another marketer yesterday for another recording of this podcast, and it sounds like some organizations have dedicated compliance teams, some don't. And no, there's no one right solution for everyone, but I'm just curious how you manage it.
Yeah, so we do have in-house counsel that is extremely capable and really smart with what's going on in the world of cannabis. And so it's almost the idea of, you know, I will call her up and say, so I was thinking we want to do this to bring in customers to this location. Do you see that as a problem, or have you run into this before, or is there a reason that I can't do it? And I have to compliment her because, you know, it traditionally, you know, I've, in my past experience, the lawyer's always been, no, you can't try everything. You know, she's really good at saying, let me think about it. She'll review it and she'll come back and say, okay, if you do it this way, you can say this, but just make sure you don't say that, or do this instead of that and you'll be okay. So she keeps us really compliant. Our legal team really keeps us compliant that way by staying on top of it. And for them, even keeping up for them becomes a challenge because it changes so rapidly. It changes, you know, it can change day to day, week to week. And so, yes, we're constantly, you know, reviewing the laws and seeing where we can go with it.
Yeah, I think having in-house counsel is super advantageous for anyone in this type of business.
And in-house counsel who really understands this business. You know, it's one thing to just go get a lawyer off the street and talk about a transaction or talk about forming the company or anything like that. But you really need to have somebody who really understands, who really likes, who enjoys what is happening in the world of cannabis, and that it can change, or it's uncharted territory. And, you know, it's sometimes said, well, there's no ruling specific about that. So here's my advice to you, so you don't get in trouble and don't become the one who gets cited for the example.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We actually have a guest coming on our podcast in the near future who's an attorney, and he's agreed to come on and talk through some of the challenges that he's seen working in this market. So that'll be good. Well, why don't we switch gears a little bit? Let's talk a little bit about more of the kind of the actual marketing activities. I'd love to start with kind of website marketing. I mean, the way I've always approached this when I talk with dispensaries who are not nearly as sophisticated as you is usually I kind of approach them and say, we believe there's four pillars to any kind of dispensary marketing. The first is your website and SEO. The second is social. And then the other two parts are really your outbound with email and SMS. But let's talk about SEO and content marketing and how that kind of fits into your strategy.
Well, obviously the website is critically important. And I learned from having worked, you know, from the agency side with restaurants and other retail locations, you know, getting the customer to the website and figuring out what they want to do and how they want to accomplish it, it is key. And I've worked for some, you know, quick serve restaurants, and the idea is they want to get to location, hours, and menus. That was the most important. Cannabis is pretty much the same thing, is that customers want to get on, find out what your hours are you open, you know, how close are you to me? And then more importantly, you know, what's on your menu? What do you have? Do you have the particular, you know, vape product I want? Do you have the gummy I want? Do you have this in stock? And then as we see more and more with the pre-ordering And curbside is, can I order it and then just come and pick it up? You know, we don't live in a business that you can just click on it and it gets it delivered to your house yet. You know, delivery is rolling out in Michigan, but it's not like, hey, I can click a buy now button and Amazon delivers it the next day. So for us, the website is optimized to really get you into the menu and get you looking at the product, finding the location. So it's incumbent that we have strong SEO, because most cannabis searches will start with dispensary near me, or flower near me, or where can I buy, you know, XYZ gummy. And a lot of it will start on, you know, weed maps or an aggregator like that. So we use content to educate our consumers, teach them about flower, teach them about consumption rules, teach them about, you know, how to get a med card in Michigan. Really is twofold. One, to educate our customer, but B, as fodder for SEO to drive content into us. And we like to share as much content, to create as much linking as possible. But for us, it's really about delivering that solution that will drive traffic to our site. So when somebody, you know, in Muskegon, for example, types dispensary near me, we show up as being relevant.
And so I guess you're probably making use of Google My Business then. You have a Google My Business.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
And there, the key there, I'll tell anybody getting in this space, and you know, is pay attention to the reviews. You know, Google will address that with you, but make sure you're paying attention to the reviews for two things. One, if you respond to the reviews, Google really likes that. The second of all is people can see that. And one bad apple, whether it's on your part or your customer's part, can go put up a one star very anonymously, you know, ripping you to shreds, and you've got to defend your turf. We had one comment, somebody was pissed that they had to pay $20 in taxes. That's not something we control. You know, anything else that I can control in the dispensary, I'm happy to address. And if we're wrong on it, fine. But I, you know, every state says, hey, cannabis is a great way for us to make money. And then we get penalized, you know, for just implementing the taxes that they asked to do. So I had to go back and post a comment back and say, look, I wish it wasn't like this. But, you know, we're beholden to the industry for how they tax us. But the reviews on Google My Business are huge to pay attention to. And you can actually learn from them.
What about the reviews? Is there any risk where you have to go and moderate reviews and ask for Google to take reviews down because they talk about using product or do things that may be considered kind of out of the bounds of what Google wants to see happen?
Yeah, so we have had to go to Google, but it wasn't because of use, but it was clearly a bot. We got 10 negative one-star reviews all within 2 minutes. And Google could see it, we could see it in a 2 minute period. And I had to fight with Google because while it technically didn't violate their rules, you know, it ran a script that said this place wasn't clean, this place didn't offer this, this place wasn't open. And clearly when they posted it, you know, we were open, all that. And I had to work through it with the Google rep, but there after a day or two, they realized, yeah, these came all within, you know, 2-3 minutes of each other. And as they dug in, realized, oh, you know, that's a bot that's hitting you. And ever since then, no. The other thing you have to worry about is unscrupulous employees at other locations who, you know, a manager or owner or somebody will say, hey, you know, those guys are getting a lot of traffic. Why don't we go on there and just, like, you know, negative review bomb them? But they become very apparent, you know, and I can also see it because in most cases, I can look at the customer name and look at our customer registry and see like those don't match up. You address them and it becomes pretty clear. And then those you can have conversations with Google, but some of them, the reviews get so goofy that people, I can't imagine anyone would really pay attention to it. It just hurts my ego that, you know, I dropped from a 4.9 to a 4.7 because obviously you want the highest rating possible.
I know. I can definitely empathize with that. I'm a metrics guy too. So whenever I see numbers change, I start getting a little panicky.
And especially when it's like made up or it's not, you know, it's something outside your control. It drives me crazy.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, what about social media? How does social media fit into what you guys are doing right now? Whether it's Instagram or whatnot.
It's the linchpin. And I would say in this world, it really is Instagram, because the world is visual. Cannabis is for whatever reason, cannabis is really a visual product. People, you know, want to see the flower. They want to see people enjoying it. They want to see the paraphernalia around it. So it's absolutely perfect for Instagram because of all of that. So it'll, you know, a picture says 1,000 words. Now we have to be careful. Nothing's for sale. We ask that you be older than 21. All of those various elements about it. But it's a visual medium, people, and it's great for people to share and tag. And it's a great way to drive engagement because you can create contests, you know, hey, you know, tag a friend, follow our account, and you could win a t-shirt, a hat. You know, we don't give away product, but it's a great way to kind of build that one-on-one rapport with your community.
And how frequently do you think you guys are posting, commenting, sharing on Instagram or even
well,
other channels?
Commenting and sharing, looking at other people's stuff. You know, we try to do that almost every day. We post about 3 to 4 times a week. I don't want to get to the point that somebody, you know, somebody sees it too much and says, hey, you know, it's too much clutter. The other thing is the problem I have is that flower is flower is flower. And, you know, if we post a picture of flower every single day, it starts to get lost. In addition, everybody else is pointing the same flower pictures. And it's hard to differentiate them. And so then it just turns into blind noise. And so we try to stay on top of that, where we balance between product and atmosphere and everything else along those lines.
And I know you guys do obviously email and text marketing. I think what is, you know, I'd love to get your perspective on how email marketing in particular fits into your dispensary's marketing strategy, because again, a lot of dispensaries are very dependent on text marketing, but don't spend as much time on email marketing.
Look, I'm an old school marketer, so email is humongous to me. Look, you own the customer, you own the message, you're not beholden to any of the, not too many of the rules around it. So as long as you apply what, you know, with the can spam rules and you make sure you're opting in people and all of those things, you own the message as much as possible. And so email to me, I've always a believer that if you deliver the right message, people will want to follow and pay attention to that message. So they won't put it into spam. They won't unsubscribe. And we've seen that, you know, we don't get a lot of unsubscribes on our email either. People don't pay attention, but we see that they open. But we get people paying attention, and I think that's they realize that email can deliver them something valuable.
Yeah, and I think so too. I think that's a conversation that I love to bring up whenever I talk to dispensary owners that are heavy text message users, which we love text messaging too. Let's be honest, but you start kind of unpacking the demographics of your dispensaries, and you find that while there are a lot of individuals in the dispensaries that, you know, rec or med that are coming in that are, you know, under 25 or under 30 and may have a preference of receiving text messages, you have, you know, med users that don't want necessarily to receive text messages. They are perfectly fine receiving emails.
Well, and it is very interesting because we all think, you know, ooh, you know, we all carry our phones with us. We're always checking our text message. I got to be honest with you, you know, and you know this, is that, you know, I think it's something like a 90% open rate on text messages sent and things along those lines. I think the difference is how you use them. So we like to use a text message for the immediacy of it. Hey, today is a vendor day at our facility. Hey, today is your birthday. Happy birthday. Whereas we use email to tell a story, learn more about Novo Flower, learn about this, learn about these discounts, if it's a group of discounts versus an immediate action. I like to use text to drive somebody into the business, which then allows us to even day part, like when do you send the text out? So, to me, it's the same thing I learned from when I used to market restaurants. If you market and send out a text message to visit my restaurant at 9 a.m., by the time lunchtime rolls around, I have forgotten about it completely. Same thing, you know, so that's why you get one around the lunchtime and a lunchtime special, or hey, dry, you know, happy hour. So I like to use text that way. And email gives me the ability to just tell you a lot more. There are calls to action, but allows me to tell you a lot more about what's going on.
Yeah, and I love that you bring up that delineation between those two mediums, because the way that I often position it is that a text message is really good at transactional relationships, like, hey, you know, buy now, there's a special, show this to your bud, you know, whatever it may be. Whereas email, you can build more of a narrative, and you can really enforce the brand behind the business, not just the transaction that you're trying to create with the customer. And it's a great way that dispensaries can then begin to differentiate, you know, their product, their quality, their service, whatever it may be.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where, again, you've built this relationship that they actually will peruse your email, not just for the discount, but hey, what can I learn from this? And then maybe note or make a calendar notation or something that, oh, I want to check that out. And then you can reinforce it with a text message saying, hey, now's a good time to come in. We have this special going on or something along those lines. So it's a healthy balance between all of them. And then if you look at the branding play, if you buy a billboard, if you do something else, that just reinforces the message. So if I'm driving down 31 in Michigan and I see a Nobo billboard, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I remember getting that email or text from them. So I definitely want to stop in and see what they've got going on.
So what about direct mail? I know you mentioned kind of at the top of this podcast that it wasn't something that you were currently doing, but where does it kind of fit in your strategy?
I am a huge fan of it. We just haven't done it just again. As we test out each channel, we want to work in discrete enough time periods to understand, oh, okay, this is how this email worked. Here's how this email and text work. Here's how billboards work, those type of things. Direct mail, I think where direct mail really hits the best, works the best is when you're about to open a place. So if you can go by a 5 or 10 mile radius to your location, and buy the addresses around that and then send a postcard and say, hey, neighbor, we're coming to town and we're responsible and we're 21 plus and men and rec or whatever you want to say, and bring in this postcard just so you can, you know, track it. Bring in this postcard for, you know, a pre-roll for a penny or whatever promo you want to do. I firmly believe it's a good one. Even if it just sits on the refrigerator and somebody comes in and they forget, oh, I had the postcard, I want to get this. You know, it's sitting on their refrigerator, it's sitting on their counter. Your brand is first and foremost in their house. I'm a big fan of it. And I think it really works well for those grand opening type of events that drive an offer that you can track. So, hey, we're the new ones coming to town. We're opening next week or, you know, whatever. I think those things are very helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I had another conversation I had for the podcast, and it was with a dispensary that does currently use direct mail. And the interesting comment or perspective they had on it was that they see it as part of a long tail advertising strategy, meaning that they're going to send out their texts and their emails, and they're going to start dripping out those direct mail pieces too, which I just find, I mean, it's something that I want to get more involved with again. I just think there's a lot of opportunity there myself.
Well, and the thing about it is, if you hit to the right people, again, I tend to use it more in a grand opening environment, is if you put an offer on there and can encourage somebody to say, hey, you know, sign up to find out when we're going to be opening, sign up for our email list, go to this address. It's a good way to kind of build out your email address where you're not disruptive on the computer, but somebody had to actively go do it. And boom, you know better than anyone else that, you know, once you get them into your email database, they're a good customer and they've raised their hand to say, hey, I want to get in there. So that's, again, to me, another big advantage of what you can do with direct mail.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a good segue into the next question, which I was going to ask you about, which is when you think about measuring your marketing efforts, I mean, the go-to answer is sales, obviously, but let's kind of go a little bit further on that. What are some of the ways that you're looking at? Is it, I mean, web traffic, sales, in-store traffic? What are some of the metrics that kind of let you know your business is kind of growing or getting impacted from your marketing efforts?
It's funny because we had a conversation about that today. We've seen some sales grow in one of our stores and we've been doing a lot more. And it always makes me think of the great advertising guru, John Wanamaker, who said, you know, half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The problem is I just don't know which half. So for us, it's exactly, you know, we try to look at everything, you know, sales, yes, is number one. Foot traffic in there, comments and followers on social media today become another way to tell you if your advertising is working. Mentions in podcasts, blogs, and else, other places. You know, we look at click-through rates on, you know, right now we're running some paid media. So there's some click-through rates that we're looking at to see if people are paying attention to it. So it's a multi fasted measure way to measure it, where unfortunately as a marketer, I'll always try to over attribute kind of where the value came from. But, you know, we look at everything and in aggregate to say, okay, sales are up. What do we think drove it? And just tear it apart that way.
So paid, you mentioned paid media. I'm guessing that's something like advertising on Weed Maps or something similar to that.
Well, actually what we have seen, which is the nice thing about it, is because you can't go on Google, there are some of these, you know, display networks that are willing to take cannabis. And there are some brands and destinations that will take cannabis ads. So they'll place it for you and they'll take it. So things like, you know, Sports Illustrated and some of the others will take a cannabis ad. And so we put those on there with a particular bent on conquesting. So we'll go try to target people within a 30-mile radius of one of our locations. And if we can get the data that we know that they've visited a dispensary in the last 30 days, let's go hit them with a Nobo message to invite them over to our facility.
Yeah, that's great that you brought that up. I mean, I'm a big fan of paid media, and they're, I think that's, you know, we always kind of casually talk through how you can't use Google and you can't use, you know, other kind of traditional pay-per-click models, but there are other opportunities. There are other advertising channels that are digital that you do have access to. You just don't have access to the big brand name ones usually.
Correct. And when you pay, when you buy media, you know, look, the big brand name sites are extremely expensive anyways, but if I can go find the niche sites that are willing to take cannabis, it may, well, this is what we're learning out, it may actually work better to my advantage to do it that way, because those people may be more, less tuning out the ads if they're kind of in an environment where it's disruptive, but they're willing to view it. You know, if I go to, I hate to say that, you know, New York Times or something like that, like I'm there for the content, I'm not looking at the ads. But if I'm going to another site that is, you know, more towards my hobby, I may be, and then, you know, it could be baseball or sports or something else, I may be more open to kind of looking at the ad and saying, hey, how relevant is this to me?
Well, Daniel, I think that's a great place to kind of wrap up. If anyone wants to get a hold of you or learn more about Nobo, how can they do that?
Yeah, I would love to answer any questions, stay involved with anyone. They can reach out to me at danielp@noboinc.com. And would love to answer any questions. You know, I am very much open in this industry. I don't have all the secrets. I don't have anything. So I'd love to help everybody out the right way to get people to understand, you know, what we can do together in this industry.
Well, fantastic, Daniel. Thanks for joining me. And I will make sure and include all the links and Instagram handles that you have for Nobo in our show notes, and you can get to those obviously through your favorite podcast channel, whether that's Apple or Spotify. We'll also have those posted on our website at dailystory.com, and we'll make sure to include any other links in the show notes as well. So I'm Rob Howard. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.